But first, there will be a great deal of sexual interference. A great deal. You have my word on that, Reacher. It'll be very messy. Very messy indeed. Mayor Teal and I have spent a pleasant hour discussing just exactly what we're going to do to her. Kleiner was forcing Finley practically out of the chair with the pressure of the automatic in his ear. Finley's lips were clamped. Kleiner was sneering at me. I smiled at him. Kleiner was a dead man. He was as dead as a man who has just jumped off a high building. He hadn't hit the ground yet, but he jumped. "Understand?" Kleiner said to me. "Call it 6 o'clock tomorrow morning to save Mr. Finley's life, 7 o'clock to save Miss Roscoe's life. And don't go messing with Picard. Nobody else knows my phone number." I shrugged at him again. "Do you understand?" he repeated. "I think so," I said. "Hubble's run away and you don't know how to find him, right? Is that what you're telling me?" Nobody spoke. "You can't find him, can you?" I said. "You're useless, Kleiner. You're a useless piece of shit. You think you're some kind of a smart guy, but you can't find Hubble. You couldn't find your asshole if I gave you a mirror and a stick." I could hear that Finley wasn't breathing. He thought I was playing with his life. But old man Kleiner left him alone, moved across into my field of vision again. He had gone pale. I could smell his stress. I was just about getting used to the idea that Hubble was still alive. He'd been dead all week, and now he was alive again. He was alive, and hiding out somewhere. He'd been hiding out somewhere all week while they looked for him. He was on the run. He hadn't been dragged out of his house on Monday morning. He'd walked out by himself. He'd taken that stay-at-home call and smelled a rat and run for his life. And they couldn't find him. Paul Hubble had given me the tiny edge I was going to need. "What's Hubble got that you want so much?" I said. Kleiner shrugged at me. "He's the only loose end left," he said. "I've taken care of everything else, and I'm not going out of business just because an asshole like Hubble is running around somewhere shooting his stupid mouth off. So I need him at home, where he belongs. So you're going to get him for me." I leaned forward and stared right into his eyes. "Can't your son get him for you?" I said quietly. Nobody spoke. I leaned forward some more. "Tell your boy to go pick him up," I said. Kleiner was silent. "Where's your son, Kleiner?" I asked him. He didn't say anything. "What happened to him?" I said. "Do you know?" He knew, but he didn't know. I could see that. He hadn't accepted it. He'd sent his boy after me, and his boy hadn't come back. So he knew, but he hadn't admitted it to himself. His hard face went slack. He wanted to know, but he couldn't ask me. He wanted to hate me for killing his boy, but he couldn't do that either, because to do that would be to admit it was true. I stared at him. He wanted to raise that big shotgun and blow me into a red dew, but he couldn't, because he needed me to get Hubble back. He was churning away inside. He wanted to shoot me right then. But 40 tons of money was more important to him than his son's life. I stared into his dead eyes, unblinking, spoke softly. "Where is your son, Kleiner?" I said. There was silence in the office for a long time. "Get him out of here," Kleiner said. "If you're not out of here in 1 minute, Reacher, I'll shoot the detective right now." I stood up, looked around the five of them, nodded to Finley, headed out. Picard followed me and closed the door quietly. Chapter 30. Picard and I walked out together through the squad room. It was deserted, quiet. The desk sergeant was gone. Teal must have sent him away. The coffee machine was on. I could smell it. I saw Roscoe's desk. I saw the big bulletin board. The Morrison investigation. It was still empty. No progress. I dodged around the reception counter, pushed open the heavy glass door against its stiff rubber seal, stepped out into the bright afternoon. Picard signaled with the stubby gun barrel that I should get into the Bentley and drive. I didn't argue with the guy, just headed across the lot to the car. I was closer to panic than I'd ever been in my whole life. My heart was thumping, and I was taking little short breaths. I was putting one foot in front of the other and using every ounce of everything I had just to stay in control. I was telling myself that when I arrived at that driver's door, I better have some damn good idea about what the hell I was going to do next. I got into the Bentley and drove up to Eno's Diner, reached around to the seat pocket and found the map, walked over through the bright afternoon sun and pushed in through Eno's door, slid into an empty booth, ordered coffee and eggs. I was screaming at myself to listen to what I'd learned through 13 hard years. The shorter the time, the cooler you've got to be. If you've only got one shot, you've got to make it count. You can't afford to miss because you screwed up the planning, or because you ran out of blood sugar and got sick and dizzy in the small hours of the morning. So I forced the eggs down and drank the coffee. Then I pushed the empty mug and the plate aside and spread the map on the table. Started looking for Hubble. He could be anywhere, but I had to find him. I had one shot at it. I couldn't rush around from place to place. I had to find him inside my head. It had to be a thought process. I had to find him inside my head first, and then go straight to him. So I bent over Eno's table, stared at the map, stared at it for a long time. I spent the best part of an hour with the map. Then I folded it up and squared it on the table, picked up the knife and the fork from the egg plate, palmed them into my trouser pocket, looked around me. The waitress walked over, the one with glasses.
"Planning a trip, honey?"
she asked me. I looked up at her. I could see myself reflected in her glasses. I could see Picard's huge bulk glowering in the booth behind me. I could just about feel his hand wrapping tight around the butt of his .38. I nodded at the woman.
"That's the idea," I said. "A hell of a trip. A trip of a lifetime."
She didn't know what to say to that.
"Well, you take care, okay?" she said.
I got up and left one of Charlie's hundreds on the table for her. Maybe it was real, maybe it wasn't. It would spend just the same, and I wanted to leave her a big tip. Eno was getting a dirty grand a week, but I didn't know if he was passing much of it on. Probably not, looking at the guy.
"See you again, mister,"
the one with glasses said.
"Maybe,"
I said. Picard pushed me out through the door. It was 4 o'clock. I hustled over the gravel to the Bentley. Picard followed me with his hand in his pocket. I slid in and fired it up, eased out of the lot and scooted north up the old county road, blasted the 14 miles away in about 12 minutes. Picard had made me use the Bentley, not his own car. Had to be a reason for that. Not just because he wanted the extra legroom, because it was a very distinctive car, which meant there was going to be extra insurance. I looked in the mirror and picked up a plain sedan, about 100 yards behind, 2 guys in it. I shrugged to myself, slowed and glanced left at the warehouses at the top of the county road, swooped up the ramp and round the cloverleaf, hit the highway going as fast as I dared. Time was crucial. The road skirted us around the southeast corner of the Atlanta sprawl. I threaded through the interchanges, headed due east on I-20, cruised on with the 2 guys in their plain sedan 100 yards back, mile after mile.
"So where is he?" Picard asked me.
It was the first time he'd spoken since leaving the station house. I glanced across at him and shrugged.
"No idea," I said.
"Best I can do is go find a friend of his in Augusta."
"Who's this friend?" he said.
Guy called Lennon, I said.
In Augusta?
He said. Augusta, I said. That's where we're going. Picard grunted. We cruised on. The two guys stayed behind us.
So, who is this guy in Augusta? Picard said.
Lennon. Friend of Hubble's, I said. Like I told you.
He doesn't have a friend in Augusta, he said. Don't you think we check things like that?
I shrugged, didn't reply.
You better not be bullshitting, my friend, Picard said. Kleiner wouldn't like that. It'll make it worse for the woman. He's got a cruel streak in him a mile wide. Believe me, I've seen him in action.
Like when? I said.
Lots of times, he said. Like Wednesday at the airport. That woman, Molly Beth, screamer. He enjoys that. Like Sunday up at the Morrison place.
Kleiner was there Sunday, I said.
He loved it, Picard said. Him and his damn son. You did the world a favor taking that kid out. You should have seen him on Sunday. We gave those two cops the day off. Didn't seem right they should off their own chief. The Kleiners and I stood in for him. The old man loved every minute of it. Cruel streak a mile wide, like I said. You better make sure I get to make that call on time, or your woman friend's in a lot of trouble.
I went quiet for a moment. I'd seen the Kleiner kid on Sunday. He'd picked his stepmother up from the coffee shop about 10:30. He'd been staring at me. He'd been on his way back from dismembering the Morrisons.
Did old man Kleiner shoot my brother? I asked Picard. Thursday night? He said. Sure. That's his weapon. The .22 with a suppressor.
And then the kid kicked him around, I said. Picard shrugged.
The kid was berserk, he said. Wrong in the head.
And then Morrison was supposed to clean up, I said.
Supposed to? Picard grunted. Asshole was supposed to burn the bodies in the car, but he couldn't find Stoller's body, so he just left both of them there.
And Kleiner killed 8 guys in Louisiana, right? I said. Picard laughed.
8 they know about, he said. That asshole Speranza was on his back for a year, looking for payments to a shooter, but there never was a shooter. Kleiner did it all himself, like a hobby, right?
You knew Kleiner back then? I said.
I've always known Kleiner, he said. Got myself assigned as Speranza's bureau liaison. Kept everything neat and tidy.
We drove on in silence for a mile or two. The two guys in the plain sedan kept station 100 yards behind the Bentley. Then Picard looked at me.
This guy Lennon, he said. He's not another damn treasury spook working for your brother, right?
Friend of Hubble's, I said.
Like hell, he said. We checked. He's got no friends in Augusta. Hell, he's got no friends anywhere. He thought Kleiner was his damn friend, giving him a job and all.
Picard started chuckling to himself in the passenger seat. His giant frame was shaking with mirth.
Like Finley thought you were his friend, right? I said.
He shrugged.
I tried to keep him away, he said. I tried to warn him off. So what should I do, get myself killed on his behalf?
I didn't answer that. We cruised on in silence. The plain sedan sat steady, 100 yards back.
We need gas, I said.
Picard craned over and peered at the needle. It was nudging the red.
Pull over at the next place, he said.
I saw a sign for gas near a place called Madison. I pulled off and drove the Bentley over to the pumps, chose the furthest island and eased to a stop.
Are you going to do this for me?
I asked Picard. He looked at me in surprise.
No, he said. What the hell do you think I am? A damn pump jockey? Do it yourself.
That was the answer I wanted to hear. I got out of the car. Picard got out on the other side. The plain sedan pulled up close by, and the two guys got out. I looked them over. They were the same two I'd scuffled with in New York on that crowded sidewalk outside Kelstein's college. The smaller guy had his khaki raincoat on. I nodded amiably to the two of them. I figured they had less than an hour to live. They strolled over and stood with Picard in a knot of three. I unhooked the nozzle and shoved it in the Bentley's tank. It was a big tank, well over 20 gallons. I trapped my finger under the trigger on the nozzle so that it wouldn't pump at full speed. I held it in a casual backhand grip and leaned against the car as the gas trickled in. I wondered whether I should start whistling. Picard and the two Hispanics lost interest. There was a breeze coming up, and they shuffled about in the slight evening chill. I slipped Eno's flatware out of my pocket and pressed the tip of the knife into the tire tread next to my right knee. From where Picard was standing, it looked like I was maybe rubbing my leg. Then I took the fork and bent one of the tines outward, pressed it into the cut I'd made, and snapped it off, left a half inch sticking into the tire. Then I finished up pumping the gas and latched the nozzle back into the pump.
"You paying for this?"
I called to Picard. He looked around and shrugged, peeled a bill off his roll, and sent the guy in the raincoat off to pay. Then we got back into the car.